Welcome to Zero, I'm Oscar Boyd. Over the past couple of days, smoke coming from Canada's worst ever forest fire season has blanketed much of the country and spread southeast to the United States, smashing pollution records in both countries. On Wednesday afternoon, New York had the worst air quality of any city worldwide, as the smoke turned the sky a sickly orange.
It looked like it was gloomy looking. It just, I don't know, looked like something out of a movie. Apocalyptic type of movie.
I think everyone in our school was freaked out. It was so dark, first of all, and then everything was orange. It felt like weird.
Sort of horrifying to see not only how much of an effect it has, just because, I mean, the entire city was lit yellow, and just how far everything travels and what that means for the environment.
Wildfires are not new, but they are increasing in scale and intensity as we warm the planet, exposing more and more people to dangerous levels of air pollution. So today on Zero, I'm talking with Aksha about the effects of that pollution on the body and what you can do to protect yourself from it. Aksha, currently more than 400 fires are burning across Canada, with smoke blanketing cities across North America. And this is going to have huge impacts on people's health as they breathe in the polluted air. But North America isn't alone in this. How big is the problem of air pollution globally?
It's actually quite big. You know, we're talking about it during a time of an intense event, but the World Health Organization estimates that 9 million people die every year from air pollution. And just to put that in context, about 55 million people die every year. So that means 20% of deaths annually are in some way linked to bad air, because again, the World Health Organization estimates that 99% of people alive today are breathing air that is bad. Some are breathing air that's very bad.
So you said 9 million people are killed annually by this. What are the main sources of air pollution?
So about 50% of those deaths are from indoor air pollution. And that is mainly from people burning wood and biomass, which is the choice of fuel in poor countries even today. But also things like gas stoves and even kerosene heaters. The other half is from outdoor air pollution. So that's things like industrial emissions or from exhaust of vehicles in cities and increasingly wildfire smoke.
And when we say pollution, what kind of things are we actually talking about? What counts as pollution?
That's right. Like air pollution can be a lot of things. So there's carbon monoxide, there's ozone, there's nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and all of those things can have harmful impact. But the one that we should focus on today is particulate matter pollution. And that's basically, as the name suggests, these tiny particles. They're sometimes unburned fossil fuels or unburned wood or even dust that are very, very small. You probably have heard the term PM2.5, where the PM stands for particulate matter and 2.5 stands for the size of the particle, which is measured in microns. And 2.5 microns is tiny. Microns is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. And one way to put it is, if you had to take a human hair, you could fit 30 different PM2.5 particles on its width. So these are very tiny particles. When people inhale it, it first goes into their lung, but very quickly it's absorbed into the bloodstream and then it just ends up everywhere in the body.
So it ends up in the bloodstream, it's traveling around your body at whatever the speed of blood is. That can't be good, right?
No, it's very bad. The thing is, the more we've studied about air pollution, the more we've found out just how bad it is. And it affects the body in many different ways. So one reason is because when these particles end up in different organs, the body thinks it's a virus or a bacteria and it starts attacking it. And there's inflammation and that can cause organs to perform poorly or fail sometimes.
And with an infection, what normally happens is you get that inflammation, your body's immune system takes care of the virus or bacteria, and they then disappear. But if you've got long-term exposure to air pollution, it's constantly triggering your immune system, then you're going to have this constant negative response that damages parts of your body.
That's right. I mean, in the short term, people who are exposed to air pollution experience coughing and stinging eyes, runny nose, chest pain, even headaches. And those difficulties can go away after you get to breathe clean air again. But if you're exposed to air pollution in the long term, which is the reality for many parts of the world, even today, Delhi, where my wife comes from, is blanketed in air pollution almost all through the year. And it's very bad air pollution. So in those places, especially, the impact of air pollution can be increased risk of lung diseases, even cancer. There can be impacts on the brain because those particles can enter the brain. So there is risk of stroke, increased dementia. And there are even studies showing cognitive impact on students who are exposed to air pollution and their performance in school. And there's intense impact on vulnerable people. So young people whose bodies are not fully developed can suffer developmental problems from breathing in air pollution. Old people who can't recover as quickly from these impacts will suffer because their health outcomes are worse and perhaps their underlying conditions become worse. And pregnant people have perhaps the worst outcomes because they are carrying an unborn child and that child is really developing very, very quickly and air pollution can have pretty negative consequences.
And on that topic in particular, our colleagues recently published a story and a documentary film to go alongside it about what they called bushfire babies, which is kind of a horrible term to have to use. But this is all about the lasting health impacts of Australia's 2019 to 2020 black summer bushfires, one of the worst bushfire seasons on record there.
No one's quick to link anything to the fires here. But yeah, I know in my heart that the breathing issues happened straight after the fires, if not during.
In the short term, how do you protect yourself from air pollution? You know, are masks back in? Are we going back to COVID days?
Yes, they kind of are. I mean, ideally, in these conditions, you shouldn't go out. You should be able to check your air quality index. You know, just Google your city and air quality or even your neighborhood sometimes and air quality, and it'll tell you a number. If that number is more than 150, it's actually a bad idea to go out.
Yeah, so just for context, on Wednesday, the air quality rating in New York was actually at around 350.
That's right. I mean, if you do have to go outside, try and take care by putting on a mask. An N95 mask or something similar, which tightly fits, is a good idea. You know, avoid activities that would cause you to breathe heavily. Don't exercise. And if you can afford it, get an air filter indoors. So increasingly in cities like Delhi, people who can afford it, buy air filters and run them constantly all through the day to be able to have cleaner air, at least while they are at home.
And then thinking a bit longer term, you know, last year we traveled to Ottawa together to interview Canada's Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau. And one of the things that we quizzed him on then was how over the last 20 years, because of the increased forest fires, Canada's forests have gone from a carbon sink to actually becoming a carbon source. So reducing forest fires is critical, both for this topic of air pollution we're talking about, but also for reducing carbon emissions. What can be done to actually reduce wildfires and try and stem this source of pollution?
It's a good question. And, you know, when I asked Justin Trudeau this very question, he stumbled with an answer. And that just shows that even a climate progressive leader like him struggles in a country the size of Canada with such huge forests. Of course, wildfires are naturally occurring events too, and some of it can be helpful to a forest. But what we need to do now is to understand how on a warming planet that these fires can become very intense very quickly. And there are tools being developed, both from ancient knowledge of managing a forest through prescribed burns, as they are called, so that you can control the amount of fuel that's available when a fire does come along. But there are other ways in which you could map and have management around dousing fires quickly, something that the US West Coast is really at the forefront of, just given how intense those fires can be. And sometimes it's not people, it's infrastructure. So again, in the West Coast, there have been bankruptcies. So PG&E, a utility in California, has declared bankruptcy tied to having fires that were started by power lines. And so utilities are increasingly either, if they can afford it, put those cables underground or make sure that the cables don't actually go and get in contact with trees and wood.
Moving from wildfires to air pollution more generally, the world actually has got a decent track record of fixing air pollution problems. London back in the 1950s was notorious for its smog. That's since been fixed. And on a global level, in 1979, major industrial countries came together to sign the Convention on Long-Range Transboundary Air Pollution, which was targeting sulfur emissions that were contributing to acid rain. And that treaty was also a huge success. But still, 9 million people a year die from air pollution. So do we need a new kind of treaty to deal with this?
Yeah, so that dealt with a very specific kind of pollutant, which is sulfur. And that was causing acid rain. And that had all kinds of impact, not just human health impacts, but also impacts on agricultural productivity, on the infrastructure and the quality of buildings. You know, there were places around the world, including the Taj Mahal, that were turning yellow because of increased sulfur pollution. So that was a really interesting way in which we tackle pollution. There's another example of how we tackle air pollution in the Montreal Protocol, which is to do directly in a way with climate change, because the gases that go into refrigerators, for example, had a huge impact on creating a hole in the ozone layer, but also warming the planet because they are very intense greenhouse gases. And this treaty forced companies around the world to come up with an alternative. So regulations, especially globally agreed upon regulations, can have a big impact. We are starting to see some experiments of that kind happening around cities to try and deal with air pollution from tailpipes. So we live in London, and London's kind of at the forefront of this because it's created what is known as the ultra low emission zone. A bit of a mouthful, but really it just tells you that there are places in London where you cannot bring in a big polluting car. So either you bring in an electric car or a very new car that has a higher standard on particulate matter pollution. Or if you have to bring in a polluted car, you have to pay a hefty fee to bring it in. And that has made the air quality in London just get so much better over the past decade. And more cities, especially in Europe, are starting to adopt this method.
And we're talking today about wildfire smoke and air pollution because of the events that are happening in Canada and that are impacting major cities like New York. But similar fires do happen every year all around the world. Malaysia and Singapore suffer from these kinds of events most years. Delhi, you've mentioned. Bushfires in Australia helped define their elections last year.
Yes. Nowhere is immune. That's what Arna Greta Hunter of the Australian National University told Bloomberg. That she worries that people think there are privileged parts in the world that are not vulnerable to climate events. And that's just not the case. And what's happening right now proves it.
Thank you for listening to Zero. If you found this explainer useful, please take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can email us at zeropod@bloomberg.net. We've linked to more reporting on this topic in the show notes. Zero's producer is me, Oscar Boyd, and senior producer is Christine Driscoll. Our theme music is composed by Wondley. Special thanks this week to Janet Babin for the voices from New York, as well as Kira Bindrum, Sarah Hirji, Kendra Pierre-Lewis, and Todd Woody. We'll be back next week.